You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Many people are gearing up for an especially stressful Thanksgiving this year, as we learned when Philip Galanis joined us a few weeks ago. But while we can't resolve family tensions, we can help with that other stressful part of Thanksgiving, the huge meal. And no food has seen more debate, deliberation, and dissection as the Thanksgiving turkey. Joining me now to talk turkey and to take your calls is Melissa Clark, the James Beard Award-winning food columnist for the New York Times dining section, author of many cookbooks, and a longtime guest on this show. Melissa, welcome back.
It is great to be here.
And to our listeners, if you have any questions about this year's Thanksgiving turkey, give us a call. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And we have a number of recipes from you that we have posted on our Facebook, on our page, on our show page. We'll get to that later. This year, you have suggested in the Times an unusual method for roasting the turkey, splaying it. How did you come up with that method?
I started with a chicken, and I like to think of my turkey as an overgrown chicken. It takes the stress out of it. You know, people think, oh, no, turkey, and it makes your heartbeat faster. You're a little bit worried. But when you just think, this is just a big chicken, I got this. The key is not to make it dry. But yes, a big chicken that tends to dry out and takes a really long time in the oven and is extremely heavy. So I started with a chicken, and it's basically just a little tweak on a very standard method, which is a skillet roast chicken. You heat up your roasting surface, you heat up your skillet, and then you add your chicken to a very hot skillet. And what happens is when you put the chicken in, the dark meat, which is touching the skillet, starts to cook before the breast. And I thought, well, that's good. You know, the back of the thighs start to cook because they're touching the skillet. And I thought, what if I just cut the skin, opened up the legs, and let all of the dark meat touch the skillet? I have more surface area, and then it also creates distance between the legs and the breast. So the legs are cooking faster, and the breast is cooking a little bit slower.
And that's because the legs take a longer time, and thighs,
right,
to cook?
Yes. So the dark meat, the legs always take a bit longer than the breast. The breast meat cooks more quickly. And the big problem, especially with a turkey, but you see this with chickens too, is that with a roast chicken, sometimes you'll get a bit of a dried out breast for the legs to really cook through. And this just, you know, helps even out the cooking time.
The way people try to get past that is to wet brine the turkey, but you suggest a dry brine.
You know, it's pretty much functionally the same thing. You know, what you're doing is you're adding salt. The turkey is absorbing the salt, and the salt helps keep the moisture in the bird, and of course it also flavors the bird. Whether you use a wet brine or a dry brine, I find a dry brine easier, but it's serving the same purpose.
The wet brine, of course, requires having a big pot to stick a huge turkey.
Yeah, and then you need to find a fridge space to put that in. It's not very good for New York anyway. If you have a nice, you know, extra fridge or you have a cold garage, it's easier to dry to wet brine. The thing is, though, a wet brine turkey, unless you take time to dry out the skin, won't have as crisp a skin as a dry brine bird. So that's another thing to consider.
Now, there are some other things that you're doing here that might seem unorthodox. You are cooking in a roasting pan, but you're not using a roasting rack.
Yes. So the idea of this method, this splayed method, is that you really want the hot metal to make contact with the dark meat.
Are you afraid of burning yourself when you're putting it in?
You know, I'm never afraid of burning myself, which is probably an occupational hazard because I do burn myself, but then it's never that bad. No, you don't really, if you're careful, you will not burn yourself. You just have to, look, you're going to be holding a giant turkey. It's slippery, you know, it's cold. You're going to be putting it on hot metal. Just proceed with caution and you will be fine.
So you put it directly onto the roasting pan, but you also don't... You put it in a perpendicular way rather than lengthwise.
Yes, because the idea is you want, you know, when you put a turkey in a roasting pan in a rack, you want to put it lengthwise because it's sitting in the rack and it's like a little basket for it. When you're putting it directly in the pan, you want to have room for the legs to splay out, and both sides of the thighs need to be flat. And the only way to do that is perpendicular.
Do you press it down?
Yes, you press it down. So you know, you've got your you lower your turkey, you heat up your pan, and then you take your cold, wet. Well, hopefully not too cold. You should take your turkey out an hour before you want to cook it. So your lukewarm turkey, you put it in the pan, and you're going to get a lot of splattering. It's going to be very dramatic. That's going to die down after a few seconds, and that's exactly what you want. You want that heat immediately transferring to the dark meat to jumpstart the cooking.
And we have a caller about this. Susan from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Melissa, I saw your article in the Times, and I decided I'm going to be brave and try that this year.
Great.
But my turkey is 19 pounds, so how much longer am I going to have to cook it?
Okay, well, so two problems, and this is to anybody who wants to make this recipe with anything more than a 13-pound bird.
Yeah, ours is 18 pounds.
Yes, yeah, so the problem is you're going to need an extra-large roasting pan, or your turkey legs are not going to fall flat. So the first thing you need to do is make sure your turkey actually fits in the pan.
Okay,
so... And then as far as adding on cooking time, you're probably not going to need that much more. I think probably another, you had a 19 pound?
Yes.
It's probably another 5 minutes per pound is my guess. And again, I haven't tested it. So just keep taking its temperature. But so I used a 12, so we're talking 7 pounds. So about another half an hour, say 30 to 40 minutes. But you really need to stay on top of taking its temperature because I'm not 100% sure on the timing.
Okay. When I figured it out, I was thinking an extra half an hour.
Yeah.
So, but I'll just keep measuring it then.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
and, you know, let us know.
That's what they made meat thermometers for.
Exactly. And then next year, we can put that into the recipe, and it will help people out for next year. So do give us, you know, when you go to the NY Times cooking page, there are comments there. Do put after you make the turkey, put your comments so that it'll help people out for next year.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now, there's also the matter of braising here. You're braising the legs?
Yes. Okay, so this is another thing about the dark meat, especially in a turkey. Turkeys are very sinewy. You know, their leg meat is very strong. They have to do a lot of walking, I guess, and they build up those muscles. They got a lot of weight, too, to carry those big breasts. So they need to have strong, sinewy muscles in their legs. And that, when you're roasting it dry, it does not get as soft as if you braise it. When you braise those sinews, they soften, and they're really much more delicious. So the question has always been, you can cut the turkey up, and you braise the dark meat, and then you roast the white meat. That's, I think, Julia Child suggests doing that. But this does the same thing, except you don't have to cut the turkey up. You do it all in the same pan, all at the same time, because after you've seared that dark meat in your hot pan, you put onions and you put wine or any kind of liquid. You could use broth. And you are essentially braising the dark meat. And then the white meat, which is sitting on top, it's sort of raised up above the liquid, is roasting.
And if you're using a wine, should it be white or red?
Either one. Either one will work. Red will be very non-traditional, but, you know, kind of thrilling.
And we'll
We'll give it some oomph. I used white when I tested it. I tested it several times. I used orange juice and white wine one time, which gave it a little sweetness. I used stock once, which was nice, but I preferred the wine flavor. But you could use wine and stock. Really, you could use a liquid that you like in a sauce.
Will a $5 or $6 wine do?
Totally. Totally. You can cheap out.
Don't go out and buy the big ones, the fancy ones. Let's take another call. This one is from, we had a Susan, now we have a Suzanne. Hi, Suzanne.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Thank you. Melissa, this is my question. I'm in a food group, and we had a practice Thanksgiving last week, and the woman made a 7-pound turkey breast, which she claimed to have cooked for over 3 hours at 325 and basted it a lot, and it was terrific.
Ah, okay.
But my butcher was horrified and suggested 350 for 2 hours. And she cooked it to 160, and he said 150 to 155.
I agree with your butcher on the 150 to 155 for the breast. You know, it's really enough. And you take it out of the oven and it's going, especially when you're just cooking the breast, it will rise up to, you know, the temperature it needs to be, which is 165 while it sits. So do pull it at 150. You're fine. I've never done it at 325. So now, this was a bone-in breast or was this a boned breast that was tied up?
It was not tied up. It was bone in.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that's low and that seems long to me. I probably would do it more like your butcher suggested, but the way that I usually like to do this, I would my standard method, and I like this because you have a lot of control, is I start it hot, and I do this with all my turkeys, whether I'm splaying it, spatchcocking it, or just roasting it whole. And I would do this with the breast. Start it hot. Preheat your oven to 450. Get color on it. As soon as the skin turns the beautiful color that you want, turn down the heat, and then you can turn it to either 350 or 325. And what that does is it guarantees you a very good-looking presentation because you have the color, and it gives you control over when you want to pull it. You can pull it anytime it's done because you don't have to worry about getting the color on it. You already have the color, so it gives you the most flexibility. So start it out hot and then lower the heat.
Now, some ovens are uneven. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Say it's against
yourself. Maybe 20 minutes to get it brown?
Yeah, about 20 to 30, I would say.
Okay, is there a meat thermometer brand that you recommend? I'm kind of hesitant about meat thermometers.
Definitely get a meat thermometer. It really makes a huge difference. I have about 10 meat thermometers of all different brands. I really do like the ThermoPen, I think it's called. It's the super fast one. It reads it in 3 minutes. I mean, 3 seconds, as opposed to taking like 20 seconds to come up to temperature. But it's spendy. It's over $100. Mm. So I know. And I'm a professional. I justify it by I'm a professional. I need it. But, you know, you can just go to...
You can also write it off on your taxes.
Write it off on my taxes. But you can just go to any cooking store and get any thermometer, and you're going to be fine. Just make sure to use one.
And where do you put it?
Oh, this is a great, very good question. So for the breast, you put it right... You never want to touch the bone. That's going to throw the temperature off. So you always want to make sure you're putting it just where the flesh is. Don't stick it... Don't stick it in to the turkey as if you're nailing, you know, you've got a hammer and a nail straight. You want to do it at an angle because you want to not touch the bone, and you want to be able to get as much flesh touching that thermometer as possible so you get an accurate reading. So just put it in at a little bit of an angle at the thickest part.
And the same with the legs?
Same with the legs. The thickest part of the thigh, and again, at an angle so you're not touching the bone, or the breast, thickest part.
Do you rotate the turkey? Because some ovens are uneven.
No, I'm lazy. I probably should. It's probably a good idea.
We're going to take a little... Oh, well, let's take another call, and then we'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about spatchcocking.
Fantastic.
And just simply roasting a turkey and all sorts of other things. We have a bunch of recipes that Melissa has provided us with on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. This is from Solmaz from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
So I had a question about dry brining. I have an 18-pound turkey this year, so unfortunately I won't be able to display it. But just generally about dry brining, Melissa, I saw that your recipe, you put it in a Ziploc bag and you store it in the fridge for however long you're going to dry brine it. I'm wondering, I'd like to put it in the fridge without the bag, and I was hoping to start that today to give it 3 days, but I was worried that that might be too long and that it would dry out the turkey too much, and I just was wondering if the purpose of the bag is to capture the juices that are going to be coming out of the bird, or if the purpose of the bag is to keep the bird from drying out too much, and whether I'm going to be making a mistake by sitting it in the fridge for 3 days uncovered.
So that's an older recipe. That one's from a couple of years ago. I have since stopped with the bag. So right now I take my turkey, I put it directly on a rimmed baking tray. It's very important because you want to catch the dripping. It will start to exude. So a rimmed baking tray. If you want, you can put it on a rack, which will get the underside dried out as well. Since I splay the bird and I'm searing that underside and then braising it, I don't bother with the rack. But if you're going to just roast it straight away, put the turkey on a rack. The reason for the bag is that I use a ton of garlic in my brine, and it will stink up your fridge. And my turkey stinks up my fridge. So the bag, but I have two fridges, so it stinks up one of my fridges, and then the other one has the dairy products, and I just try to keep it separate. Another idea, though, if you want to have, it does dry out the skin, though. By not having the bag, it dries out the skin, which gives it a crisp skin, which is very nice. And if you want that same effect without having to worry about sticking up your fridge, you can very lightly put some plastic wrap on top, but leave a lot of air. Try to, you know, prop it up so that you have some air circulating, and that air is what's going to help dry it out. And then maybe take the plastic off the, you know, 6 hours before and let it dry out a little bit, you know, so it'll just stink it up a little bit.
Okay, so Buzz?
Okay, yeah, so I put it on the rack. The juices that come out don't need to be reabsorbed back into the chicken?
Nope.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much.
Take care.
And let's go to a little break. We'll come back with more and more of your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. My guest is Melissa Clark, who writes a weekly column for the New York Times dining section. She has written a number of cookbooks, and she is also, 30-something now?
30-something-ish.
And she's also won the James Beard Award. And we will be taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org on Facebook or Twitter. My handle is at Leonard Lopate. We're back with Melissa Clark of the New York Times and cookbook fame, a James Beard Award winner. Well, someday the Pulitzer.
Maybe one day.
And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And we're talking turkey today, and a lot of people are going to be buying frozen turkeys.
Yes.
I know you don't recommend them, but if they do buy a frozen turkey, how much time do they need to thaw them? And is it preferable to keep them in their wrapper and thaw them in cold water?
If you have time, the best thing to do is just keep them. You can keep them wrapped up. Thaw them in your fridge, but it's 24 hours for every 5 pound of bird. I know, it takes forever. So if you've got yourself, if you're buying a frozen turkey today, you're going to need to help it along a little bit, and that cold water method is pretty good. So what you do is you keep it in the wrapper, you get a giant bin of some kind, or you fill your sink with cold water, not warm water. And this is important because you don't want to, you don't want bacteria to grow. So you want cold water in your sink. You submerge your bird in the wrapper and you just keep refilling it with cold water. And then, you know, you do that for a couple of hours. And maybe how long should you do that? I would say put it in your sink, do that until you go to bed, and then put the turkey in the fridge and check it tomorrow and just kind of keep tabs on it. Because so if you have a, say that you have a 15-pound bird, well, if you have a 15-pound frozen bird and you start today, you're going to be okay. But if you have a 20-pounder, you want to help it along a little bit.
Yeah, of course, you could always put it into a wet brine, and that would help it along as well.
That's true, actually.
Well, let's talk a bit about spatchcocking, because it was mentioned earlier. How do you prep a turkey for spatchcocking?
Well, spatchcocking is opening the bird up like a book. It's you make a cut along the backbone. Generally, for a turkey, you actually remove the backbone. When I spatchcock my chickens, I actually leave the backbone in.
You could just use a knife with a chicken, I'd imagine, to cut that backbone out. But with a turkey, you'd probably need a hacksaw.
Well, I've done it, and it's really hard. I mean, maybe just because I have very weak, small hands, and I can't quite, but you need to get big, huge shears, and then you need to cut through all those bones, and it really does take a lot of strength. I have done it. I'm very grouchy when I have to do it, which is why I like the splaying method. I find it easier, but it does make a great turkey. The bigger your turkey, the harder it is to spatchcock, because the thicker the bones. So if you have a 12-pounder, it's not going to be as hard as your 20-pounder.
Some butchers will do the spatchcocking for you.
Yes. If you have a nice butcher and you bring them cupcakes, maybe they'll do it for you. My butcher actually has not done it for me the past couple of years. I've been on my own. So.
And what is the advantage of spatchcocking?
So spatchcocking. So you're opening up the bird. You're cutting the backbone. You're cracking. You're also cracking or cutting through the breastbone so that you're able to lie the turkey flat in your roasting pan. And when you have a flat bird, this also helps cook the white meat and the dark meat evenly, and it does it fast. So instead of, because you're exposing so much more of the bird to high heat, and you're able to cook it, you're able to cook it hotter, and you're able to cook it faster. The whole thing will cook in maybe an hour and a half, an hour and 15 minutes, I think, is what my last spatchcock bird was, which was a 13-pounder.
So that's one of the advantages.
Yes, and you also get, you're able to get really crispy skin on it, which is nice. You get, it's a fast method, it's a crispy method, it's a high heat method, so you have to be careful, you know, just watch it carefully so it doesn't burn, but you really do get a nice moist breast and you get well-cooked legs.
And a listener asks on Twitter, what modifications, if any, to a brine would we have to do if we're spatchcocking?
None. It's the same. You can brine it any way you like.
Another person asks, do foil pans work for doing a turkey, even if you're splaying?
No.
The kinds that you buy in the supermarket?
No. Okay, that is a really good point. No, they won't, because you need to be able to put that pan on your burner, and if you put a foil pan on your burner, it will actually burn. It won't survive the heat.
Another listener writes, those little plastic things that come with pizzas, with a pizza delivery, are great for putting turkey up on and when you're brining.
Oh, that's really smart.
Yeah, it gives you just a little bit of
air
underneath.
I love that. That's so smart. Yeah, and then you don't have to worry about it, especially if you're also baking and you're like, this happened to me last year. I had my turkey on a rack and I was baking. I was like, where is that? I can't find my rack anywhere. I can't find my cooling rack. And of course, it was under the turkey, which was not good for my pies.
Once the spatchcock turkey is laid flat, can you still fit the bird in a roasting pan, or do you need to have a flat sheet pan?
A flat sheet pan, it will cook it even more quickly and give you even browner skin, because you have you don't have the sides coming up and preventing the heat from reaching all of the bird. You can use a regular roasting pan, but I really like it in a sheet pan.
Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Victor?
Yes.
Yes, Victor.
Good morning, Leonard. I was just telling the lady that this is my third year in a row that I get through, and thank you for this. I am always looking forward for this week. My wife learned from my mother-in-law to cook the turkey, but what she does is she roasts spices, sesame seeds, I'm talking about the pumpkin seed, and cloves and garlic, and she roasts them, and after that she puts it in the blender with tomato juice, blends it in, adds onions, adds cilantro, and then that becomes a gravy. And they pour the gravy on the roasting pan, and then they roast the turkey on top, but the bottom is sitting on the juices of this gravy, plus the fats, the render fats that get into the juice, and we rotate that turkey until it is completely cooked. And it's never dry. It's always juicy because it's cooked, boiling. I mean, pretty much it's...
He's cooking it in a liquid. Well, you're talking about cooking it in a liquid as well, just a different kind.
It's exactly the same concept. You know, I open the legs up and I sear them first before I add the liquid. But I love that idea of the tomato juice with the sesame seeds and the clove and the pumpkin seeds in the blender to make this gravy. That sounds fantastic. And anybody who wants to try that as a liquid instead of wine and onions, I think, and you put onions in that as well, I think that would be fantastic.
Okay, Victor, thank you.
That's a great idea.
You're welcome. I would like to send you, hello?
Yes.
I would like to send you the spices so you can try it.
Okay, well, so you can try it. You can always reach Melissa at the New York Times. You can reach me here at WNYC. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate here with Melissa Clark, and we're talking about turkey, surprisingly, because even though people roast them every year, or sometimes they do other things, they deep fry them or they barbecue them, it still remains pretty much a mystery for a lot of people. Kevin from Brooklyn asks on our show page, my host is pretty insistent on grilling the turkey whole. Any thoughts on that?
You know, I've never done that. I would do it with a spatchcocked bird. I think anytime you're using high heat, you know, direct heat, you want as much surface area as possible. You really want to open the bird up. You want it to cook quickly because it's such high heat. You don't want it to burn, you know, the exterior to burn before the interior cooks. So if you're going to grill, I'd say spatchcock it. Grilling is also great for parts. You know, if you want to cut the turkey up, it's easier to maneuver on the grill. I mean, one problem with spatchcocking is that if you do want to flip it, that's, you know, it's tricky, although you can do it with a little help. But I've never done, I mean, indirect heat would be your friend here. So you'd want to get the grill. You'd want to set the grill up for indirect heat. You wouldn't want to, especially if you were going to do it whole, you want to make sure to just keep an eye on it and make sure that it doesn't burn.
The messiest, I imagine, is the deep fry.
God, you know, a deep fried turkey is really good, but you need to have the whole setup, or you need to have, you know, You have to build your own setup. So,
and a lot of oil.
And a lot of oil. And you need to do it outside. This is not something you can do inside. This is not a, you know, New York City-friendly technique unless you are brave and you have a fire escape, although it's probably illegal on a fire escape.
I think so.
I would imagine. So,
what about just simple roast turkey? Is there anything that we should be doing differently than we've been talking about?
You know, I did a recipe a couple of years ago for the Times for a very simple, elemental roast turkey. And it's, you know, it's fabulous also. I mean, it's a great, you know, here's the thing.
You used to put that in a bag.
That was the one I put in the bag, but now I would probably do it without brining it in a bag. But, you know, I mean, when I recommend, every year I do a recipe, or not every year, but I often, you know, every couple of years I'll do a new recipe for turkey. And this isn't to say the old ones are bad or the way that, you know, you're doing it is bad. It's just to offer another opportunity to try something new. And the simple roast turkey is still a classic. It's a great recipe. The only thing I would tell people is it's really better when you don't stuff it. It's to have an unstuffed turkey. Don't truss it and don't stuff it. What you're going for is air circulation, as much hot air as possible to cook that bird evenly.
So if you want to have stuffing, you should just make it separately.
Just make it separately.
Just call it stuffing even though it isn't stuffing.
Or you know what you can do? Here's another cheat. Take your stuffing, put it in a casserole dish, get some extra turkey skin, or buy some extra turkey legs, or even some necks, and just put it on top so you get the turkey juices and the crispy skin on top of your stuffing, and your stuffing does not have to go into your turkey.
Can't you just take some of the liquid from the bottom of the turkey roasting pan and pour it over?
Sure can. Oh, and you know, that's what I do actually for my stuffing, is that I take the simple roast turkey, I just take those juices and pour it right, some of them into the gravy, and some, because I make the gravy ahead, so some into the gravy and some right into the stuffing, and then you get those wonderful drippings.
You also have a recipe for mustard and rosemary roast turkey. What kind of mustard do you use?
I like to use a Dijon for that. I don't want the texture. I don't want the grainy whole grain for this particular recipe. I want a smooth mustard that has a lot of sharpness.
And that is a whole turkey, or are you doing that with parts?
So that one's parts. So another, let's talk about cooking turkey parts, because this is a great way to do it. Okay, especially if you are going to feed a crowd, say that you want to try my splayed method and you want to use a small turkey, so you have a 12-pounder, but you're feeding 20 people, buy some extra turkey parts. I find it so much easier to roast a small whole bird, or even just if you're just doing a whole bird, and then you have your parts also going at the same time on another rack, and that way you have the extra meat that you need. You only need to present one turkey. It's not huge. It doesn't, you know, break your back when you're trying to maneuver it. It's easier to handle. It's easier to control, and it's easier to cook it so that it's moist. And then your parts are extras. Plus, this is great because if your family only likes white meat, you get an extra breast. If they like dark meat, you get some more extra legs, or you mix it up. It gives you flexibility, and cooking the parts is just easier.
The only problem is there's that presentation aspect where
right.
you bring the turkey out. It looks like something from out of a Norman Rockwell painting.
Well, you know, I have to say, once you start spatchcocking and splaying it, you've already lost that. It already looks really funny. I mean, it tastes better, I think, but it's not as beautiful as, you know, the classic roast bird. But if you want to do your classic roast bird, do a small one and then have some extra parts. It really will make your life easier.
Deborah from Marine Park, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'm wondering about putting it in a smoker, putting the turkey. My son-in-law was thinking about doing that. I don't know if that's recommended or not.
Well, they do sell smoked turkey at every deli.
Yeah, no, smoking is great. That is great. I'm assuming it's a hot smoker. So you're going to be cooking the turkey while you're smoking it. I have not done it, but I know that there are thousands and thousands of websites probably just devoted to this kind of thing. And I would say the most important thing for smoking anything, whether it's a turkey or a pork butt, is you have to make sure your smoke is hot enough, and you have to keep it constant because the heat of that fire is what's cooking it. It needs to be low, but it needs to be hot enough. And I know that I've had trouble in the past when I've done it is to make sure that it's hot, but not too hot. So there are, you know, I would go to the experts and I would read up on it and, you know, tell your son to read up on it, but maybe you should read up on it too. That way you can kind of help him out along, you know, help him along with the process.
When you have roasted a turkey, how long do you let it rest before you serve it?
You know, no matter what kind of, for a whole turkey, you want it 20 to 30 minutes, but no matter what kind of method, like whether you're deep frying it or whether you're roasting it or whether you're grilling it, you always need to let that bird rest before you cut it.
We have time to sneak in another call from Tom from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air. Tom?
Thank you for your show. My friend's in the Army, and he told me that he cooks all the turkeys upside down, which I thought was kind of strange. Have you ever heard of that?
You know, I would say I would do it the opposite. I would have the upside down, meaning the breast first, as opposed to...
Yeah, the bottom is on the top, and the breasts are down by the juices.
You know what? Yeah, people do that, and I do that for chickens sometimes. And what it does is the theory is that the moisture from the bird is it's self-basting the breast so that all of the fat runs through the breast and keeps it moist. And it actually really does work. The only problem is the presentation isn't as nice because you don't get that browning on the breast. And if I mean, one thing you could do, and it's easy to do with a chicken, is you start it out, you know, that way. Upside down, and then you flip it so that you get the browning on the breast. But it's really hard to flip a turkey.
Will you be cooking other things in preparation today or tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. I've got
butternut squash soup, something like that?
No soup. We go straight in. We just go straight for the meal. But, yes, I've roasted. So another thing that I always tell people, butter. If you're not making pumpkin pie from canned pumpkin, if you want to use fresh pumpkin, don't use pumpkin, use butternut squash. I promise you, it is so much better than even those little sugar pumpkins. It is the sweetest, most tenderest thing. And in fact, a lot of what's in those cans is actually squash. So try it this year. You're going to be happy. So I'm roasting right now. I've got roasted squash that I have to puree. I rendered some lard over the weekend for my pie crusts. So I've got to make my pie crusts. I've got what to do.
For years, NPR's Morning Edition featured a segment on making a turducken. Have you ever made it?
No. Have you?
No. It just seems like a lot of work for nothing. But
I'm going to do it 1 year. But not the same year.
You have to debone all of the birds.
Maybe I'll buy one. I've never even had a turducken. I should actually try it 1 year.
Well, anyway, have a wonderful holiday.
You too.
And I hope that our listeners got some good ideas out of this. I know I did.
Well, and people can check for the recipes and read people's comments on the cooking website because they're very helpful. A lot of people have made these recipes before, and they've done some test runs with them over the weekend.
And we have links to that on our show page at WMIC.org. We also have a number of recipes that Melissa has supplied. And Melissa Clark is the James Beard Award-winning food columnist for the New York Times dining section. She's written many cookbooks, and she's been on the show many times. Always love seeing you.
Love to be here.